Hello, everybody, and welcome to All Sports Best, the podcast. I'm Trey Gonzalez, and I'm joined today with a special guest. His name is Mr. Jim Center, and he is the athletic director at UTEP. And we're also joined by Danny Ramirez, one of our head blog writers. Jim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing outstanding. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Danny, how's it going?
Doing good, Trey. How about you?
Good, good. See, Danny actually went to UTEP, so he knows a lot more of the inside stuff. So he's going to be a big help on this podcast, especially. My first question for you, Mr. Center, is, you know, what's it like? What was it like being athletic director of UTEP for the first, you know, 6 months on the job? Was there an adjustment period for you?
Well, there really hasn't been an adjustment period. I can just tell you, it has exceeded all of my expectations. In all honesty, I would tell you guys, UTEP in El Paso, it's one of the best kept secrets in America. This is an amazing community. The people are just wonderful, very, very friendly, very family oriented. They love the Miners here. They want all things related to El Paso and UTEP to do well, which is really exciting. And the Miners own the town, so it's exceeded every expectation I had. Great weather, great Mexican food.
Yes, absolutely. What does it all entail? What does being athletic director of a big Division I program mean?
Well, you know what? It encompasses a lot of things, obviously. One of the biggest things, though, would be, you know, setting the vision for a program and then hiring people to fill that vision and go there. I will tell you the thing I've talked about since my interview and every day since I've been here, and the mark on the wall is for us to compete for and win championships. And that means compete for and win championships in Conference USA, the league that we're in. So we're excited about that opportunity. Certainly we have a lot of room for improvement. There's tremendous history here in several sports, such as, obviously men's basketball, track and field has done well. Football's had a few flashes, would have done well. We won a national championship in rifle. You know, so there's some opportunities here. And now we got to get to the point where we're more competitive week in and week out across all of our sports. But what I'll tell you is many, many athletic directors are defined by their hires. And certainly when I was interviewing for the job, Sean Kugler had already resigned after the fifth game of the football season, so I already knew I had to hire a football coach. And then the very day that I was announced as the new athletic director, a longtime UTEP named Tim Floyd abruptly resigned and left. So anyway, wow. I had two marquee head coaches that I need to fill, and I spent an inordinate, but it captures a lot of your time, energy, and attention just hiring those two marquee coaches and onboarding their respective staffs.
This leads me to my next question, actually, because I don't know if this is unusual or not for an athletic director to hire, you know, a head coach for the football team and a head coach for the basketball team. But, I mean, how did you approach that? Because that's a big task right off the bat.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, this isn't the first time I've had to hire coaches. So, you know, as you grow up in the administrative ranks, you have the opportunity to participate on searches with your athletic directors and other colleagues. And so you kind of know the battle rhythm, if you will, what it takes to get there and how to get it done. The university, I think, was poised and ready for making those transitions, those changes. So it was all hands on deck trying to get it done. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I come from a coaching background in football, so I felt very, very comfortable with trying to make a football hire. And then I felt a lot more pressure because of the success that our basketball program has experienced, you know, over the years and the rich history here. You know, I felt a lot more pressure getting the basketball coach hired. But I also had a lot more time to get the basketball coach hired, and I had a lot of time to vet candidates. And that's what we did, went through our diligence and the due processes associated with it. And I thought we ended up with a short list in each one of those sports that were really sound and strong. And then it's just a matter of doing the interviews and seeing who fits and what is the very, very best fit.
I have to say, I mean, I think you did a great job in hiring Coach Dimmel and then Coach Terry. I think you guys, I mean, you can just tell they're, I don't know if it's you feeding that type of what would you say, like the type of chemistry or character in the coaches, but it seems like everybody's pretty hyped up to start, you know, their new season. So that's pretty amazing to see.
Well, I think there is a lot of energy around our program right now, and that's not to take anything away from anybody else. I just know we hired two really good people who are proven, you know, winners. They've won and been successful where they've been. They're certainly well respected in our community and in their respective professions. I mean, I'll tell you, our focus has always been on fit, and then what fits. And that's a good question. Everybody thinks they fit somebody else's job, but then the truth is, do they really fit? And what we were looking for in both of these hires were people that had strong ties to the state of Texas. We knew that we were going to be able to hire either a setting head coach or someone with head coaching experience, and we wanted people that were really good people. And people that had great integrity and were good people, because at the end of the day, what we really need to do to go to the next level is we need to do an exceptional job of recruiting. And I think we hit a home run with both of these hires.
Mr. Center, what about the UTEP culture has been the most important?
Oh, wow, that's a really, really good question. I would say just having an appreciation, in my opinion, of all things El Paso, the people, the culture, the weather, the location, the rich history and tradition, you know, here that we have at UTEP. And yet a lot of people will be the first to admit that we can do a lot better. I mean, we certainly haven't arrived. We had an 0-12 football season. So there's a lot of room for improvement. But I would say it is understanding and believing that this is an amazing place. It can continue to get better. And the way we're going to get there is by people. And that really dovetails very, very well into what I talk about all the time. Every person makes a difference. You know, hashtag EPMAD. And I believe that there's enough people here, enough resources between the communities of El Paso and Juarez, Mexico, that, gosh, there's about 2.25 million people here. And there's enough people here that this job in this university could be as good as any Power 5 job in the country. But we got to get a lot more people involved.
Danny, you wanted to ask about the EPMAD concept, right?
Yeah, I did, because actually it's something that actually stood out to me when I first started following you on Twitter, Mr. Center. I was just curious to see what it stood for. And once I found out, every person makes it different, I'm totally on board with this approach and initiative here. How can we, you know, get these people to get riled up and actually make a difference?
Well, you know, Danny, thanks for the question. That's a really good one. And, I mean, you're an alum, and I think that's what Trey said earlier. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have about 100,000 living alums, right? That's wonderful. But we only have about 1,000 that are actually donors and supporting our program. And so what I've got to do is talk to every single person, just like you, Danny, and say, listen, I need you. We can't get there where everybody wants us to be unless we have tens upon tens of thousands of people. We don't need one or two mega donors. We need tens upon tens of thousands of people doing whatever it is that they can do. So as an example, make a donation and join the Minor Athletic Club. And if you said, Jim, all I've got is $10, I'd say, God bless you. Thank you for your $10. If you said, I can do 10 a month, I'd say, that's even better. Do 10 a month. So the point is, it's not about that you can't participate or you don't have enough. It's about just do your part. If you can buy a game ticket, then buy a game ticket. If you can buy season tickets for as low as $55 and set in the end zone, then buy them, right? So we have too many people sitting on the sidelines saying, I'll join, I'll be a part when you guys are good. And the truth is, if we don't get more people involved and add to the overwhelming fan support and reach critical mass, we won't get there, or it'll be a lot longer getting there.
Absolutely, yeah. That's one of the things that actually drives me crazy as a UTEP fan, is to see the Sun Bowl or the Don Haskins actually failed only when we're winning. And I've seen the Sun Bowl and the Don, you know, rocking whenever, even if it was before the Tim Floyd era or even when it was the Mike Price era. I mean, these are places that can be heard, and it actually makes a difference against the you know, opponent. So I think this is something that we actually need, and I'm on board for this, absolutely.
Well, and to your point, it's one thing, first of all, the fans pick up on that energy and thrive on that. Now, if the fans love seeing a full stadium, how much more do you think players enjoy it? And then the next thing is, if players enjoy it, how much more do you think prospective student athletes enjoy it? So mm-hmm. when everybody says, we want you to be good, recruit good players, what they need to understand is they can have a profound impact by showing up and being uber supportive, even when we're not doing well. Because what it tells players and prospects is, holy cow, they love their sports here. They love my sport. And that's the kind of place I want to go be a part of. If everybody stays away in droves, it doesn't help us get there any sooner.
Mr. Center, to build off of your last point, I know that recruiting is a huge part of success and obviously future success. So I wonder what your stance is on paying of players in the NCAA and all of that conversation that's going on.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, and it may be one of the most highly talked about and debated issues today, if you're in the college sports world in particular. And here's what I'd say. I think on many fronts, we have probably lost the public relations battle as it relates to that, because there's a perception that these universities are making all of this money and these young men and young women are receiving nothing.
Right.
And the truth is, if you're a student athlete and you're on a full scholarship, then many of these young men and young women will leave with a college education where they have no debt. They've had upwards of $200,000 worth of benefits that have come to them over a four-year period of time. They've had some of the finest training facilities anywhere in the country. They've traveled through all parts of the United States and some even abroad. And they have all the support of academic centers, sports medicine, strength conditioning. So I mean, the amount of money it takes to run an operation like this at every single level, and the benefits to these young men and women are amazing. I mean, it's a lot of money, but no one ever talks about all those expenses and what goes into giving them the finest and the best of everything.
Right.
So in a lot of ways, I feel like they already are being paid.
Okay, that's a really good point too. I think you're right. A lot of people kind of look the other way when it comes to some of the benefits that college athletes actually receive. What athletes should we be looking out for at UTEP that have actually gone through the program and are looking to make a pro squad or are making an impact in a professional league somewhere?
Oh gosh, well obviously the two largest ones that have come out just recently from football, Will Hernandez. I mean, we're really excited about Will and his wonderful opportunity that he has in front of him. And then Alvin Jones, obviously, I think everybody's more excited for Alvin because of what his brother did, coming out before him. But I'd be remiss. I mean, gosh, I'm sure I would leave people out if I started trying to name everybody. I just know this. There's a very, very small number of young men and young women that will ever have a chance to play professionally. And we all tend to latch onto those people because it's very, very high profile and they tend to make a lot of money. But I know this, we graduated north of 50 people between this May and back in December. And those young folks are going to go out and do wonderful things in their careers and professionally. And that's what college is supposed to be about. You come to school, get your degree, so you can go on and live a good life. And 99% of these young people are going to do that very thing.
Given the success from, Will Hernandez, Naren Jones, and Alvin Jones, do you see that as a benefit going forward for recruiting?
Oh, I think it's always a positive to be able to point toward young men or women who have gone on before and reached the highest level. Because let's face it, particularly in the two or three or four marquee sports that every university has, where there's opportunities for professional sports afterwards, every one of them are going to college thinking, is this school going to help me get where I want to go, which is to ultimately play professionally? And so, well, obviously, UTEP isn't at the top of the pecking order, and we're not in a Power 5 conference. I think young men could look at this place in football and say, gosh, they've got a long track record of putting players in the NFL. There's several that are current right now. There's a couple more that just got drafted. And that bodes very, very well when you're in some young men's living room and you're talking to them and their mom and dad about coming to school here and still being able to achieve all of their dreams and goals.
Right.
I know that this is a little bit off topic maybe, but I want to know what your relationships are with rival schools, you know, the schools that you guys face year in and year out. And of course, fan bases might have some type of tension, but what is it actually like in the athletic department between schools, like say New Mexico State?
Yeah, you know, that's a wonderful question, and I will tell you from our fans that are around here. I mean, UTEP fans want to beat New Mexico State. If we were playing marbles or anything else, ping pong, we would want to beat them, and that's okay. I hope that their fans feel the same way. But what I would tell you is that doesn't mean that I have to cast disparaging comments or say negative things on social media, toward New Mexico State. And frankly, they're having a lot of success right now in baseball and softball, their basketball program, obviously. And they went to their first bowl game in many, many years. So I know Mario, their athletic director, and many people on their staff. I mean, congrats to them. What it does is it inspires me for us to work harder and do a better job. I don't need to run them down or talk ill of them in any way, shape, or form. Congrats to them. I know this. We need to get Minor Nation fired up to support us, and we need to take care of our own business, because I think the mark on the wall is if they can do it in Las Cruces, we can do it here in El Paso, and that's what we're going to do.
It's a great answer. Definitely a great answer. Jim, I'm going to kind of take us back a little bit. You know, what got you so interested in sports? You know, at a young age, obviously, you probably took a lot of interest in sports themselves, and then it just grew to the, you know, to the point where you are now. You've been involved with sports your whole life. How did that start?
Yeah, well, what I tell you is, I unfortunately wasn't a very good athlete in high school, and I joke with some of my high school teammates and stuff, and coaches look at me and go, that guy right there is a coach killer, you know, not tall enough, not fast enough, can't catch, can't run, can't tackle, but he's on the team, right? So anyway, I know this, you derive a lot of benefits from participating in athletics, and that's really why I do what I do today. I mean, short of maybe someone serving in our nation's military, where you sweat and you bleed and you put something out on the line, and there's a competitive element there. Of course, in our nation's military, it's potentially life-threatening in many of their situations. But athletics teaches people to be goal setters. Athletics teaches people to be a part of something that's bigger than themselves. And to really set aside yourself and your own selfish desires for something that's bigger that you could never attain by yourself. Athletics teaches you about adversity, and really is a metaphor for life. You know, we're all going to get knocked down. Life can be tough and deal you some unexpected blows. The question is, are you going to get back up? Are you going to get back in the game of life, and you're going to play hard? Even if you're behind, do you never quit, right? Those are the things that athletics teaches people. So as a young high school athlete, and not a very good one, once again, I might add, it taught me a lot of those things. And so when I had a chance to go on and go to college, that's what I started thinking more and more about. I think I want to be a high school teacher, coach, and try to instill those same kinds of values and attributes in other young people. So that's really kind of how I got started.
Awesome.
Mr. Center, you used to be a coach, correct?
I did, yes, sir.
And how has that shaped you as athletic director? I mean, do you think that experience has helped you?
Well, I can tell you, I think most coaches would tell you that they can appreciate the fact that, they appreciate the fact when their athletic director has coaching experience. I don't think you necessarily have to be successful as an athletic director, but I think coaches think you do. And coaches feel like you have more of a kindred spirit if you've coached and you've done home visits and you've done the grind and you've been on the road recruiting and you sacrificed family time. And you know, that old saying, you've experienced the thrills of victory and the agony of defeat. So I think coaches like that. I feel like I've got a good rapport with our coaches, and yet at the same time, I'm not afraid to challenge them and question them on what they're doing and why they're doing it. That doesn't mean I have all the answers. I've had a series of one-on-one meetings, or I shouldn't say one-on-one, but there's been three or four of us in a room with every single one of our head coaches in their program, and we spent an hour, hour and a half talking about, you name it, everything underneath the sun that affects their sport. I've learned a tremendous amount But at the end of the day, those coaches can look across the table and know when I'm asking them something about recruiting or this or that or roster management, that I'm asking it from the context of having been a coach before. And so I'm curious, but I'm also not afraid to question why do they do what they do.
Yeah, that's great. That type of experience is great because it actually gives you some insight as to, you know, what the coaches might be thinking, and it lets you associate with them and kind of see where they're coming from. But, you know, I have to mention that I was blown away when you decided to start that fan console. I had never seen anything like that before. How did you come up with this idea, or how was this concept developed?
Well, I'd like to act like I had an original idea. It's not an original idea. There's been several other universities and folks that have done that. But I can tell you, my whole goal here, and once I got here, was, and in my 100-day plan, was basically I want to hear what people have to say about the minors. And I want to go externally, and not just to donors, not just to season ticket holders. I want to go to the fans all over this great community and ask them, what are we doing well, and make sure that we keep doing that. And then if there's areas for improvement, what are they? So we've had 15, 16 town hall meetings now. We have another one tomorrow night at the Angry Owl out on Sargosa, on the eastern side of El Paso. So we're still doing these, and we're still in a fact-finding mission. But basically, once you have all these facts and you come back, now you got to go, well, now that we have this information, what are we going to do with it? And I wanted to create a way for our fans to have a voice, to continue to engage and provide us with input and some insight. And that when we come up with maybe some things that we want to do as it relates to these ideas that we got and things, areas for improvement, for them to be able to say, yeah, you're on track, or no, you're still missing it. You're not quite there yet. So we're excited about it. It's we've had our first meeting. It's gone very, very well. And I think it will continue to serve its purpose.
I actually saw that one of the fan council members shared their notes of their initial meeting. And one of the big topics on there was RV tailgating. That seems to be something very important for minor fans. Is that something that we can bring back, or?
Well, so that's a wonderful question. In fact, I saw some banter on Twitter and social media related to, you know, I'll just talk about tailgating as a broader subject right now. But, you know, we talked about tailgating and then some of the breakdown in elements of tailgating, which included RV tailgating. Just because you review something doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to change, right? And so we're still looking at all things related to tailgating. We're talking with people across campus about are there things that we could change, you know, reviewing the current policy and procedures related to it. And so we got some really good feedback, but that doesn't mean that, because everybody has a different interpretation of what they want, right? And I think we've got to do a better job of articulating what the current situation is, and then here are some things, some additional things that we want to do a better job of, and then see how it goes from there. So I think sometimes there's a misperception that maybe the fan council is going to fix all the problems. They're not. The fan council is there to help provide guidance, insight. They're there to help articulate the message from us back to the fans, you know, to the best of their ability, because they all have a sphere of influence. And then hopefully, you know, I'm just a big believer that in collaboration with other people, you find more synergy. That when we tackle difficult and challenging issues or subject matter, that we have more brains at the table to help us solve it and come up with the best set of options that we possibly can.
I think this is a great concept, actually, to start the EPMAD movement. I think that's a step in the right direction, and I think you really will get a lot of valuable feedback, and hopefully changes coming soon as well. Given, you know, as minor fans, it's hard for us to make every football game, and I've noticed that this year we actually got more games on ESPN. But is there any way that we would be able to partner up with a local station here to televise those games for football or basketball?
Well, that's a good question. It's more complex than we can get into on this podcast. What I would tell you is, if there are opportunities for us to do that, we want to explore that. If there's a pecking order, you know, we have a deal with CBS. BN Sports. We have Facebook. We have, my mind's drawn a blank right now. We're going to have ESPN 3 and ESPN Plus on the non-linear stuff in the digital streaming. And so there are windows potentially where if the games are not picked up nationally by cable, obviously, or a linear TV, which is the big three, maybe we could do that. But I can tell you those games are really, really hard to get on, and particularly the networks have already got a lot of their programming done. And so, let's say the CBS station here in El Paso is probably having to air what CBS tells them they're going to air, which is a regional or, at the worst case, or a national game at best, right? So it's very, very hard to get clearance, for a local game for us on when it's here. And then when we go on the road, those games are owned by somebody else. So that's kind of the challenge.
Guys, All Sports Best is sponsored by Constructors, Inc., Albertsons Market, Kaleidoscoops, Ice Cream & More, Fashion Eyeworks, and Bowen Insurance. Mr. Center, I have a question for you. It is, any advice you'd give to athletes that are, trying to give themselves the best chance to make it on a college squad, specifically Division I, or just a program that's trying to, recruit and give out scholarships?
That's a very, very good question, and it really, I think, depends on what kind of sport you're talking about. I think high school football coaches, if you're talking about high school football, then the high school coach still probably has the greatest influence on a person's ability to get recruited. One, because college coaches still go to high schools and recruit and talk to that head high school coach. So, obviously, if you're head high school coach, let's just say you're playing for an ABC team, and the coach at ABC goes, gosh, this guy isn't good enough to play at the Power 5 level. A college coach is going to go in there and say, coach, do you have anybody? And they're going to say, I've got a couple of guys that might be suspects, might be a prospect, but I don't think they're Power 5 players, right? And so, why does a coach say that? Well, because the coach knows that his word, he's putting his word out there as to what he thinks a player's capability is to play.
Right.
And so high school football is like that. And so that's a big place there. So how can a high school athlete do a better job? Be a good player, right? If you can't dominate, as a player in high school at your respective position, it's going to be pretty hard for someone to turn on video and film and watch you and go, God, this guy ought to play at a Power 5 school or at a BCS school or an FCS school. So as an example, you could be a terrific player and you're a 6'2", 260-pound offensive lineman, but that ain't going to fly if you're going to go play in the Power 5, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
So you're a great player and you have tremendous feet. You grade out well, but at the end of the day, you're probably not going to be at that level. You're probably going to end up at an FCS school or D2 or D3. So it all kind of depends on what sport, what level you want to go to, or what level you're good enough to go play at. And then even with all that, there are surprises all the time where someone beats the odds.
What pointers to character do you look for when you're looking at, because I know you said you were a coach and you recruited and everything like that. So what pointers to character do you look for when you're thinking, okay, we're going to sign this guy, we're going to offer him a scholarship, but of course you have to know they're a good person.
You bet. It's a tremendous question. And I tell you what, there are probably more busts in recruiting, not because someone was talented enough physically, but because they either weren't a right fit, for the institution,
mm-hmm.
and or they had character flaws. And so what I would question is, does it matter if a guy or gal is talented beyond belief and this amazing player, but if they don't play for you very much because, number one, maybe they're not a good student and they're not committed to getting their degree, so they're ineligible, right?
Right.
What about if they have some character flaws in that they really aren't good people? So what I mean by that is they cause dissension in your program, on your team. They may have or actually do some nefarious activities where they get removed from school or hurt other students. You know, there's just a lot of things. We see more and more young men and women come to college campuses all over America today, and they are already carrying a lot of baggage. Everything from drug and alcohol abuse to mental illness. And when they get to this level where there's even more pressure, it oftentimes is exacerbated. So these young people, you have to ask really tough questions. And the more people you know about a prospect, so spending time in with the prospect in their mom and dad in their home, mm-hmm. is very, very revealing. Talking to the counselor, teachers, high school principal, talking to the people who basically watch this young man or young woman throughout their life and go, this is a good kid, or hey, yeah, I'm telling you, you might want to stay away from here. You better ask the tough question. They're really trying to tell you, this person's got some character flaws, right?
Right.
And so you just have got to do the work. It's the same thing the NFL is trying to do before they draft athletes to professional franchises. And the ones who do it really well have really picked through the issues related to character.
Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Center. I really appreciate you being on the show. Danny, do you have any final words before we go?
All right, Mr. Center, this is probably going to be a loaded question, or maybe not. But in your first year, I'm sure you have some goals in your mind, right, that you want to accomplish. Could you share some of those goals that you'd want to accomplish in your first year?
Well, we're well on our way, but I've got them very succinctly. The first thing is we want to compete for and win championships. The second thing is we have four metrics that we're going to work very, very hard on trying to accomplish. And they're really the kind of metrics that we can work hard on. We may not hit them all, but we're going to work really hard. Number one, we want to reach and create 4,000 donors to the minor athletic club or to any gift account that supports intercollegiate athletics. I mean, we're only at about 1,500 donors right now. So we want to grow by 2,500 donors between now and December 31st. So that's the first big one. The next big one is we want to get to 10,000 season tickets for football. We're at about 5,000. We want to get to 5,000 men's basketball season tickets. And then we want to get to 500 season tickets for women's basketball. And then last but not least, we'd like to sell out each one of those sports in their opening game for the 2018-19 season.
That's awesome. Well, perfect. I look forward to supporting all sports. So thank you so much.
All right, guys. I appreciate you. Thanks so much for having me on. You bet. Bye-bye.
Hey, guys. Don't forget to share, like, and subscribe.